Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to a true Broadway favorite, Kristen Chenoweth. Musical theater fans won't need an introduction, but just in case, Chenoweth made her Broadway debut in Steel Pier in 1997, and in 99 won a Tony for her performance as Sally in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Her other Broadway credits include The Apple Tree, Promises, Promises, On the 20th Century, and, of course, Wicked, in which she created the role of Glinda. She's also busy on screen, winning an Emmy in Pushing Daisies and appearing in shows like American Gods and Trial and Error. And on top of all that, she just released her latest album, For the Girls, which features a group of guest artists including Dolly Parton, Ariana Grande, Jennifer Hudson, and Reba McEntire. Broadway audiences will get a chance to see Chenoweth perform those songs live in a concert run at the Nederlander Theater, November 8th through 17th. Kristen's in the studio with me now to tell us all about her new album, the new musicals that look ready to bring her back to Broadway, and that time in Wicked when she flubbed Popular, like really bad. Hi, Kristen. Thanks
Hi.
For being here.
Thank you for having me.
How you doing? How's your... I'm talking to you just a few days after the release of your new album, For the Girls, and it's doing great. For people who haven't had a chance to hear it yet or have maybe seen, you know, bits and pieces of the, you know, like the Aria Grande video or something, who are the girls and why is this one for them?
I guess after my last record, I was like, what do I want to do next? You know, and I kept writing.
That was a couple years ago.
I kept writing down the same songs over and over, like, I want to do, you know, The Way We Were. I want to do Carole King. I want to do. Right. And I just kept looking at the list. And I was like, I told Steve Tyrell, my producer, I said, it feels like it's, you know, for all women of all styles, ages, genres. And after we started singing and recording, I didn't set out to make like this female empowerment thing. It just sort of evolved. And he goes, you know what it is? You know what it is, man? It's for the girls. It's just the way he talked. And he was right. Yeah. So it's for, it's for the younger generation that maybe doesn't know who Eva Cassidy and Dinah Washington are and Edie Gourmet. Mm-hmm. And it's why I love that I have great guest singers on there like Ariana and Dolly and Reba and J-Hud because it's all different and there are no more rules, and I think that's one of the things I wanted to say.
Rules in terms of genre, rules in terms of what in particular?
Well, I used to, what I guess I mean is when I first started recording records, it was like you have to stay in your lane. You know, you have to.
And what was your lane? Sort of Broadway.
Well, that was always the problem because, you know, no matter how I say this, I don't mean it to sound arrogant, but I'm a trained opera singer, but I grew up singing country and gospel, but I love music theater. I love pop music. So this gave me the opportunity to have kind of all of it on there. You know, it's funny. There's not a lot of soprano singing on this record.
Right.
And that's sort of how it happened for me in the beginning. But really and truly how it all started was like this for me as a singer. So getting back there is what's been coming as I've gotten older. Certainly, I love the colorature. I'm so grateful for the training that I have because it does allow me to weave in and out. But this album is, you know, I look at the song list and I'm like, wow. First of all, it was very scary, but I'm kind of glad I faced my fears.
Do you have a sense of why these songs in particular, kept coming back to you? What was it about them that you really more anxious to record?
Well, for me too, I'm still old school enough that I still look at the arc of an album, though I know that people are looking at singles now.
Nobody listens to albums anymore, right?
Right! But I still like, how do I want to start? What do I want to say? How do I want to take the people on the journey that want to sit down and listen to it from start to finish?
Sort of a theater impulse, right?
The kind of arc of it. Exactly. Yeah. And so it seemed right for me to start with The Way We Were. That, of course, I'm paying tribute to as well to Marvin Hamlisch. You know, this is not just for the girls, it's for the men who love us, you know.
Right.
Behind every, in my opinion, a lot of strong women have either a strong brother, a great dad, or their gay best friend, or, you know, there's a man behind them going, you can do it. Right. And I've been lucky because I've had that. And I wouldn't be even brave enough to do this record.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And in terms of, you mentioned your crazy list of guest artists. Who did they, first of all, why were these the people that you wanted to work with? And what was it about the individual songs that they're on that sort of made them a good fit for those?
Well, when it first started, I said to my manager, Eddie, if I could just have the opportunity to actually sing with Dolly, mm-hmm. then I can leave this planet. And I'll be okay.
Right.
You know? And he called Danny, her manager, and she said, well, yeah. And I was like, wait, what? Because I thought maybe we'd do Here You Come Again, you know, Here You Come Again.
Oh, yeah.
She said, no, if I'm going to sing with Kristen, I want to do something I wrote.
Oh, wow.
And that's how that happened.
Right.
And then with I'm a Woman, which I really resisted recording.
I Will Always Love You, by the way.
Oh,
for
yeah,
listeners
sorry.
Who maybe don't know.
Only
yeah,
her biggest
yeah, we
hit.
Should say it. Yeah.
We should.
Yeah.
And you know what else I'm glad she did? By giving us that song to sing, it stayed in the theme of For the Girls about being listening to your gut mm-hmm. and taking a bet on yourself, which she did when she wrote that song because her and Porter Wagner were splitting up.
Right.
And that was her mentor. So imagine leaving her mentor, telling him, I've got to fly, I've got to soar. You taught me, but you've got to let me go. And they had a big fight.
Right.
And she went off and wrote that song and came back and played it for him. And he said, you're right. It is time you go. So... It showed me, it's been a constant lesson for me of bet on yourself, yeah. even when nobody else will. And even with more success, continue to bet on yourself. So it was in line with the album idea.
Yeah, right, yeah. And then what about some of that, yeah.
Oh, God, well, forget about it. I'm a woman, you know, I was really resistant to record it because I said, everybody's going to want me to riff and sound like Aretha, and I'm not that singer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Tyrell said, do you remember who sang it originally? That was Miss Peggy Lee.
Mm.
And that is something you do, Kristen.
Right.
And I recorded it on my own. And I loved it. I loved getting to, oh, right, that is my language, you know.
Right.
Peggy just spoke saying, and then when she killed it, she killed it.
Right.
So I understood that.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, for me, I still want that strong, deep, awesome voice that, like, Aretha had when she did, you know, everybody, a lot of people put their stamp on it. And I thought, I know Jay Hud, and I mm-hmm. admire her so, as one of the best singers on the planet. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to get Jay Hud? And then I thought, you know, there's three verses. Feels like, and then another one of my main queens, the woman who has had faced a lot and overcome a lot in her life and still just leads with kindness, but never forget that talent, which is Reba.
Right.
And I thought, we're all so different. Why can't we? Again, the rule breaking thing.
Right.
Why shouldn't we? Dolly did it many years ago with Linda and Emmylou. Why can't I do it
right.
with, why?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It worked.
And when you record, do you record in the same room? Is it like a thing where you go off and you record your little bits, or how do you work with them?
Oh, old school. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Our schedules, but luckily now we have Skype.
Right.
We have Facebook. Not Facebook. We have, you know, FaceTime.
Sure.
And video. And there was a lot of that going on.
Yeah, sure.
Because we wanted the feel.
Yeah.
You know, but
right.
like that was... that sufficed for me.
Right.
I felt lucky to even to get them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And for Ariana Grande, when did you first meet her? Was it before Hairspray Live? Or
yeah. Oh, yeah. She was 10, and her nana brought her to see Wicked, and she brought her backstage, and she came to my dressing room, and her nana introduced her, and she said, "This is my granddaughter Ariana, and she wants to be a singer too." And I go, oh, that's so sweet, you know.
And she was actually on Broadway not long after
not
that,
long
actually,
because
she was in 13,
bringing that up. Not a lot of people remember that.
Yeah.
That's her roots, too.
Yeah, right.
But then she kind of, like, did a little, and her grandma was like, sing something for her, you know. And she kind of like, I don't know, you know. And she kind of sang something, and it was so good. I had a little wand in my dressing room from Wicked, and I just gave her the little wand, and I said, keep this, and just keep doing what you love. And then just checking in with her over the years and watching her success and watching her truly fly.
Right.
Then in Hairspray Live, you know, we always were connected, but we really, really bonded. And that was when the bond was Right. Unbreakable.
Yeah. And so for people who don't know, what's the song you do with her and why that one?
I chose it hoping that she would say yes, because I knew I wanted to duet it with somebody, but I chose Leslie Gore's version. Well, my tip of the hat to Leslie Gore of You Don't Own Me. Of course, Dusty had a barn burner with it too, and I love it, but I always tend to go back to the original source, and here was Leslie, and I've always thought Ariana sort of sounded in that world. Like, in fact, she could play her. Like, she could do a biopic on Leslie. Like, that's a voice that could do it. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah. But I think, make it happen, Hollywood.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I just chose that for her, in a way. So, of course, I'm celebrating Peggy Lee. Right. I mean, Leslie Gore, and Ariana's doing Ariana.
Right, right. Yeah. And what's your musical approach to it? You talked about sort of the ability to not stay in your lane anymore, to sort of weave around. What then guided you sort of overall for each of these songs?
So interesting. I if you're going to redo something, you know, you want to really put your stamp on it.
That's the thing, because, like, it needs to be familiar, but not your
own
imitation, right?
Yeah. And I have to be very careful in this department as an artist, because Dolly was such a huge influence. I don't even mean to, but it sounds like her. A lot of times I'm going to compare to her, you know, and Patsy Cline is such a unique, special voice. It's like I could only hear her singing Crazy. In fact, that was another rumble Steve and I had. I said, I'm not doing Crazy. I'm not touching that, because I can only hear her phrasing. We left it for 6 months and came back, redid it. Desperado, for example. This is a perfect example to answer your question.
Right.
I'm thinking, okay, Linda did it, stripped down. Of course, when the guys wrote it, Joe and them wrote it, and Glenn wrote it. They wrote it, obviously, stripped down for their band.
Right.
How am I going to do it? How's it not been done? How am I going to do it? And how's it not been done? And does that fit into what I want to say?
Right.
So we've had it fully orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
A full orchestra.
Yeah.
And it's not how you'd necessarily normally hear Desperado, but I think hearing Linda do it, understanding that a woman can sing a man's song, and then gave me permission to now do it in 2019, you know?
Right, right, yeah. And you've alluded to some of your other albums in the past. You regularly do this kind of, you do albums and you do concerts, concert tours and things like this. What do you get from, what do you enjoy about this kind of music recording and the performance, the sort of concert recording that keeps you coming back to it? I mean, what does it add that you maybe don't get from the sort of stage and screen stuff that you do?
I think one of the most interesting components to what we do when you're a singer and an actress is that it's one thing to be in a studio, but it's something altogether different to be in front of a live audience. How many times have we sat down and heard a great vocalist on an album and then say, I can't wait to go see their concert, and then you're disappointed because they're not really performers, let's say.
Sure.
Then you have somebody that's like, you know, on their record, you know, you can kind of do it, but then you go see their show and it's like off the hook.
Right.
I've been my whole life and my career until the day I die will be wanting both.
Yeah.
And yet, when I'm in the studio, I don't want it to sound too perfect. I mean, I've actually had the conversation, like, I don't like those two words, auto-tune. Really, they make me a little nervous. Mm. Because I don't want the young artists to think that it's pristine all the time and clear as a bell and perfect. I want that. Yet, I want to be the best version of myself. So I look for all that in the studio. And then when I take it to the stage, I want that audience to walk away going, I did not know this about her. I didn't know why she would sing that song. I wondered, you know, I want them to know me as an artist. What I want is for people that were drug along to my concert that maybe didn't know who I was, walk out going, I learned so much about her and I like it.
Right.
That's what when I leave a concert and I do meet and greets, and a husband always will go, man, my wife drugged me and I was not really, I was kind of tired, and gosh, now I'm a big fan. That's the best compliment an artist can get.
Right, yeah. And so that's a very different kind of rapport that you have with audiences than you might have, like, in a musical theater.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be, to me though, if you have a live audience in any capacity, whether you're playing a role or concertizing as yourself, you have to be a master at listening to them, because it's the relationship between the artist and the audience that is so fun. Yeah. If I don't listen, for example, today, I sang on AOL The Build.
Yeah.
Okay? And I did Desperado. Right. I obviously did it with just piano. I can't afford the whole orchestra.
Yeah.
But at the very end, you better let somebody love you. All of a sudden, a big fire engine with loud sirens goes by. And I just pointed to it before it's too late. And the audience just cracked up because what in the moment, if I hadn't acknowledged it.
Right.
I'm just saying it was so loud
right.
and barreling. And it was even on camera. Like you have to listen.
Right.
And allow yourself to be free enough to be in the moments to go, and that's called life.
Right. Right. Yeah. And this will be the second time. So you're going to do... first of all, we started to talk about a little of this before we turned on the recorder. The first time you're doing this sort of concept for the album overall, completely, all the way through, is on Broadway in November. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the second time you're bringing a sort of concert to Broadway. Why is that a good place? Like, why do you want to do that? And why is it a good place for it?
Well, I was thinking about like. Where else would you want to play?
Mm.
You know, like do a concept album like I did
yeah.
at the Lunt Fontaine with, I called it my love letter to Broadway.
Right.
But it was the Art of Elegance album.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
But I looked at that as a theatrical experience, right?
Right.
This one will be, first of all, to answer your question, I think it's still awesome that there's a place that an artist like myself can call home. And that they say, come, we welcome you. Come do your thing.
Right.
So mine happens to be Broadway. I was thinking about, like, looking at the Beacon and because of the venue, you know, the music.
Sure.
But it would be almost weird of me not to go on Broadway and do it there. I kept saying to everybody, I want to perform it. I mean, I want to have a moment with this music. I'm going to be touring it, yeah, but where am I going to do that? And Broadway, you know, that's when they used to do it, you know, Bernadette Peters.
Sure, right? Yeah.
That's when I remember. And so I hope that by my love letter to Broadway, I can start bringing it back, that other artists will be invited. And I'm talking about my age, you know, like I want to go see people on Broadway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I just saw Barry and Manilow. It was just so cool to watch him.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Like do his thing, and I thought this is what needs to, like Springsteen.
Yeah, sure.
Now we need Broadway too.
Right, right. Yeah. So speaking of Broadway overall, it's coming up on what 5 years since we last saw you in a show.
Is it really?
It was like 2014, is the last thing. 2015, maybe it was 2015.
I think it was. But yeah, I think we were coming up on. I think definitely.
Yeah,
4 years.
On the 20th century was what.
Yeah. When did that time
yeah.
go?
Yeah, are you due for a return? Do you have an internal clock that says it's time to head back?
Yeah, it's been going off like really loudly in my head. But, you know, I also want, because I respect the Holy Grail, I respect the ground, the theater, the space, the time. I also want to make sure that when I do get to come back, I want to make sure it's the right vehicle.
Right.
Back in the olden days, of course, they wrote for stars. And I'm lucky that there are still people that are wanting to do that.
Yeah.
There's a couple projects that I'm attached to and that I'm like, who's going to get to the races first?
Right. Well, that's always the question.
That's
right?
always the for, question.
Yeah. And you can talk about at least one of them, right? Death Becomes Her,
Death
right?
Becomes
that's,
Her.
Yeah. That's going to be delightful. But tell us about who's putting that together.
Well, I think... So Universal Theatrical came to me a couple years ago and said, we want to attach you. And I thought it was a great idea. Yeah. I was like, would I turn my head around or get shot in the belly? And like, what part? Because, you know, I could do which part?
No.
And they kind of thought of it. They said, you know, we thought the Meryl Streep, but you could actually, you know, we kind of rethought the role. So it would be the Madeline role.
Uh-huh.
And Marco Panett has been writing. I've just read Act One.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary Griffin is our director.
Right.
And who I've worked with several times and trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they're planning on doing and what they're doing is talking to illusionists and mm-hmm. people like, you know, Penn and Teller, people sure. like that, trying to make this really unique because yeah. it can't just be a trickery show. It has to be heartfelt.
Right.
And that's
right.
why it was such a hit because right. those two women.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so far that's who's involved.
And what is there a timeline yet for that? I guess there can't be.
I would bet within 2 years. I would bet within 2 years. But we just did a reading of another musical about the woman behind the man, Earl Tupper, of Tupperware.
Oh,
and it was, all right. I know, right? You didn't know?
I did not.
And her name was Brownie Weiss. And what made her, she was doing the Me Too thing before anyone was.
Yeah.
And what that looked like in that time period. And I loved that experience so much, just with Second Stage kind of shepherding it.
Oh, cool, yeah.
And then, of course, the long-awaited Tammy Faye. And
yeah,
we've
right.
got Robert Horn as a writer now.
Oh, great.
We've had several yeah. scripts, but now we feel like this is the right direction. And again,
for Tammy Faye.
Yeah,
for,
I just want it to be done right and with respect. Yeah. So those are the three that I've kind of got my eye on.
And they're all new.
Exactly.
One of my questions here is about, because I feel like the last few things we've seen you in on Broadway have all been, you know, revivals. I feel like the last new musical was Wicked, I think,
it was
right?
It was. You know, the thing is, after you do Wicked,
yeah,
and I think I did Candide during my run of Wicked for a week. I took off and went.
Oh, did you? Is that what that was? That's great.
Yeah, it's always like, oh, I did Candide while I was doing Wicked. Isn't that crazy? I just did a week of it, and we filmed it for great performances.
Right,
but
yeah.
after you do that, you think, what do you do? And they brought me the apple tree, mm-hmm, which is
right.
the requirements is 4 roles for a woman.
Yeah, right.
And since nobody was writing anything like that, I agreed to do it at the Encore.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then it was such a hit, we took it to Broadway. And
right.
so it had never been revived since Barbara Harris. And
right, yeah.
I kind of thought, first time ever revival. And then Promises.
Mm-hmm, yep.
First time ever revival, you know? And not a lot of people really wanted to see me in that because they were like, it's not funny. You know, she's not. Right. Who are you going to cast as a woman who has an affair with a man and tries to commit suicide? Chenoweth? No.
yeah.
But I wanted to do it for reasons well known to myself.
Yeah.
I just needed to do that show.
Yeah.
And then many, many years prior, Comden and Green, Betty and Adolph had talked to me about on the 20th.
Right.
When I recorded my first record, I sang a song they wrote called If.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you're too young, but one day, we've never revived it because it's such a unique role. You need to play the Madeleine Kahn role in On the 20th.
Yeah.
And then next thing I know, it's like that time in life.
right.
And Roundabout said, do you want to do it? And I attached
right.
myself to. So even though they were revivals, I looked
right.
at them as, they were so unique. Apple Tree and On the 20th Century especially.
Yeah.
It's like, not so many people can, a lot of people can play a lot of roles.
Sure.
But not a lot of people can play.
They're very specific roles, right?
Right.
And they require a very specific skill
right.
set.
So
but,
I would, I know they're revivals, but they felt,
yeah.
and they'd never been revived.
Right, yeah.
You know, we see The King and I, we sing Oklahoma, we see them, the Usual Suspects return. Thank goodness, it makes
right.
me happy, My Fair Lady, I love them.
Yeah.
But you don't see On the 20th Century because it was written for a star.
Right.
So when the composers say, you've got to do it next, we won't allow it to be done until the right person. And now
right.
you, it's almost like you better do it, Christy.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was cool.
Are you drawn in general more to new work than classic work? Or is it, do you even think like that?
You know, I don't. I don't. I think about how it's going to be unique for me to do it. Wicked in a way was based on something. As long as it's based
yeah,
in
right,
truth,
of course. Yeah.
You know, as long as it's based in truth, I seem to gravitate toward it.
Right.
And like, probably the most fun I've ever had was doing On the 20th Century because mm-hmm.
it looked really fun.
It was. It was hard.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
the hardest thing I've ever done. It's operetta, dancing, comedy.
Yeah,
at
running
a high
around,
level.
Falling down. Yeah.
Yeah. But right. it was just, it gave me such joy.
Right.
And every performance, I was felt like, this is your role, you know?
Yeah. And are there any composers or writers who you haven't gotten to work with yet in the theater that you would like to?
You know, there's so many, it's hard to list. Of course, I wouldn't hate working with Lin-Manuel.
Sure.
I wouldn't hate that.
Lin-Manuel who?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hate it. I certainly, Pacing and Paul, you know, made a name for themselves.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I've never worked with Sondheim. And obviously our time is growing shorter.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I mean, he's working on one from what we hear, right?
I know,
he's
right?
got that Bunuel project happening, right. So.
And a long time ago, I was offered a show. Hal Prince had come to me and said, we want you to do this show called Bounce.
Oh,
remember?
Right.
And it was happening at the same time as Wicked.
Oh.
I had to decide. Same with West Wing. I had been offered a role in the original West Wing.
Right.
Not the original first year.
Sure, right.
It happened
yeah.
at the same time as Wicked.
Right.
And I just knew. I was like, I have to do Wicked. Right. You know?
And you got to do West Wing anyway, so.
I sure did. It turned out.
Yeah, it turned out. And how then, that sort of leads into my next question, which is sort of how you think about your theater work in relation to kind of your overall career, if that includes screen work. Like, how do you bounce back and forth, and what guides you as you do that?
Oh, again, I just listen.
Yeah.
You know, we got two ears and one mouth, as my mom said.
Mm-hmm.
like, double listen.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a dial, of course, depending on what I'm doing. If I'm on television, the camera's right in my face.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dial, and it's an inner dial, I call it, that I listen to. Mm. But I still pick roles, like trial and error. When I read Lavinia Peck Foster, you know, for NBC, I was like, that's a Casey part.
Yeah,
how I know to take a part is if I know I'm going to sit at home and be mad and watch somebody else play it.
Oh, okay.
Then I go, if you know that you're going to be upset watching somebody else play it, you better not let it pass you.
Right.
That's the best thing I can say.
Yeah. I feel like Pushing Daisies is ripe for a musical adaptation, right?
Thank you for saying that. I agree with you, sir.
All right. Yeah.
Brian Fuller, hurry up.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I know he would love to do it, and he's a very busy guy, too, and all of the actors are, too, mm-hmm. but we didn't get the closure. We got what I call the slow no.
Right.
And so it was like Pushing Daisies in a way. It was like that yearning, you know?
Yeah.
But I miss it. I miss her every day.
Right. And what do you like about screen work, and how does what you do on screen then influence the way you work on stage?
Sometimes with film, a lot of times with film, there's moments that an artist or an actress gets to have that is so intimate with the camera that it's very, very difficult to recreate that on stage. You know, I feel like it's easier for me to do that through song on stage,
mm-hmm.
the intimate moment. But when a camera comes up on someone's eyes, they are truly the window to the soul. And that is, you know, in roles like Pushing Daisies and even GCB and Glee, even Lavinia, who's as big as they get.
Sure. This isn't Trial and Error. I don't think we mentioned Trial and Error.
Trial and Error. You know,
which is hilarious. Everyone should watch that
Thank you very much.
It's a delightful season.
It's such a good show. And West Wing, as long as, I just keep going back to the authentic truth. If you're doing your authentic truth, it might not be for everybody, but people can't get too mad at you. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That camera is pretty special when you know you're living. There was a couple times in Pushing Daisies I thought, and that's a testament to your director.
Right.
That trusts you and says, okay, I'm going to zoom in here. So I know I've got to be as honest and real as it gets.
Right.
Or that camera is going to know. But I feel the same way when I'm step on stage.
Right.
It's an interesting web.
Yeah. Do you like Christmas a lot? Because I mean, I may have seen a few of these myself. You've been in more than one Christmas movie, and are you going to be in two this year?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah.
Tell me about your relationship to Christmas and Christmas movies.
Do I have Christmas written across my forehead? Because there's something about me that I just do a lot of holiday films.
I mean, one of them is delightfully called The 12 Men of Christmas. I may have seen it at least once, maybe more than once.
Listen, I watch it for the guys.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all
right,
so hot.
Yeah.
This actress, this woman moves to the town and has a calendar to help her, the business and everything. And I just loved it for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And it was eye candy for me every day.
And you've got two more coming this season. Tell us about
them. Like, I've got one for Netflix.
Yep.
Emma Roberts is the star and beautiful mm-hmm. actress who I love.
Yeah.
It's called Holiday, mm-hmm. and I play her crazy aunt, Susan.
Excellent.
So I would like to apologize in advance to my family for the things that I may or may not be doing on screen.
Is it lifted directly from your personal experience?
I mean, some of them, yeah, which shall remain.
Sure, of course.
And then the second movie, to switch complete gears, is with Hallmark Channel. Right. And it's, you know, they do Christmas better than anybody.
Sure.
And they tackle a subject that that is very close to me, but a subject they haven't tackled yet, and I can't give it away.
Oh,
so I'm
okay.
glad they did. It was kind of Jennifer Aspen, who I did GCB with as an actress.
Oh, uh-huh.
She's a producer as well.
Yeah.
She produced it for them and me. And Shelley Wright and I wrote the title song for it, which will be a first for me. First time I have a song of my own in a movie that I'm in.
Have you ever worked like that? So you were inspired. You knew you were writing this song for this specific. And was that interesting to you?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, then I had to approach, I was being told, okay, this is too clever or it's too insider. I'm like, no, it's the music. But really, I had to look at it from a producer standpoint too. Like, how does it fit into the movie?
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
It was really an interesting process. I started writing the song like a year before.
Okay.
And Shelley and I worked on it for a long time.
And that's for Hallmark.
It's called A Christmas Love Story.
A Christmas Love Story. Okay. And how often do you write songs?
All the time.
Yeah?
Nobody knows that, really.
I was going to say, tell me more. How often are you a songwriter, or do you think about musical theater ever, writing musical theater, or?
I think about it a lot.
Yeah.
I want someone to collaborate with me on a story I have. And it would be for Broadway. And it is obviously very close to me.
Mm-hmm.
The obvious, I look at Stephen Schwartz. I look at Andrew Lippa.
Right.
You know, I look at those kind of prolific composers because they know me so well.
Yeah, right.
But also that would be my own original sound. The sound I grew up singing, gospel and country. That's what it was.
Right.
And how it evolved into opera and music theater.
Mm-hmm.
And being an adopted child and what that's like and what your DNA versus nurture, all that is.
Yeah.
I can see that happening. I think before it's all said and done, if I don't do that, then I'll have really missed a very thing on my bucket list that I want to do.
Yeah. Would you play yourself?
I think that's also scary to think about.
Yeah.
I kind of see it in three parts.
Mm.
You know, I look at like Dove Cameron and you know, certain actresses, Beth Beers. I think of certain people. I'm like, that could work.
Oh, okay.
But I don't. I've got it in my head, and I know what it needs to be. But I don't think I could do it from start to finish.
Yeah.
It would be maybe even in a narration situation.
Right.
Dare I say?
Right. I'm intrigued and look forward to hearing more of this.
Yeah. I really want that to happen.
Yeah. Last question. What's your biggest onstage flub on Broadway, and how did you fix it?
Oh, well, I don't know if I ever did fix it. I've left a couple jokes on the stage that hurt, but that really hurt. In fact, Aaron Sorkin, when we were together, he came to see Apple Tree, and he gave me such a hard time because I did miss a joke really bad. And we had a pretend fight about it. I said, I meant to do it like that. And he said, no, it's still there. So whenever we do stay in touch, he's like, that joke is still on the stage on Broadway, by the way. He's still left.
Wow.
And I love it. You know, it's like fun banter.
Yeah.
Probably that towards the end of my run in Wicked, I was only in on Broadway 9 months. And towards the end, and that's like max for me. I just become like yabba dabba doo. I just
it's because you're doing it over and over again.
And I start to get a little
start crazy
bananas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just completely forgot Popular. I went up.
Oh wow!
White noise, like blank stare. The actor's nightmare.
Yeah,
but Popular.
Are you sure?
You know why? Because I made the mistake of relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
I made the mistake of thinking I can just...
You got it.
I got this.
Yeah.
And the minute you go on autopilot, at least this actress right here sitting in front of you, it's a bad idea. And you know, I couldn't get back on. Finally, to the point where I just started conducting the audience because they started singing it for me out of just sheer pain. They were hurt for me. And I was hurt for them, especially the money, the people who come to see it. Yeah. And I just conducted them. And I mean, I just completely broke. I mean, it was unprofessional. It was, I mean, a flop sweat for the first time in my career. Yeah. But there's people that go, I was there the night.
Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty cool to have been there. That's pretty great.
Right.
Yeah.
They're like, you didn't have a clue. And even the Stephen Remus, the conductor, was yelling out, I'll show you what shoes to wear, how to fit your... And I was like, I have no... You are speaking German. I have no idea what you're saying.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for chatting with
me. Thank you for having
me. We look forward to seeing you in November on Broadway. And then after that, in whatever gets you there at the time.
Thank you, baby.
Thanks, Kristen. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
That was Kristen Chenoweth, whose latest album, For the Girls, is now available, and you can catch her in concert on Broadway November 8th through 17th. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, it'd be so helpful if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, or tell a friend. I'll be back with a new episode next week. Until then, see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.